It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall. It is gone. Cassis does it again. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied.
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 64, the Will Middlebrooks episode. He came up number 64. What number did he take after that? Anyone remember that? 16? 16. Yeah. Shout out Will Middlebrooks, who got his rebuttal from Jemai Webster. If you haven't seen that, check out the PT socials. But if you're listening on drop day, it's April 15th. It's Marathon Monday. And Pat has dropped his iPad. This is the official podcast of Pooping Yourself While Running. Shout out Marathon Monday, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. If it's Apple, Spotify, the Odyssey app, or if you're on YouTube and you want to subscribe to WEEI's YouTube page where we've got a playlist, subscribe to all those platforms. Hit the thumbs up on YouTube, rate us 5 stars on your podcast platforms, and follow us on the socials at PlayTessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Sammy and I were at Fenway Park a couple days this weekend, credentialed up and everything. So we got that shot with Jemai. We talked to Bernardino, who's literally like the most awesome dude. We love Bernie, and he's pitched super well since coming back. But yeah, here with Sammy, here with Pat. Sox took 2 out of 3 from the Angels. Vibes were in the toilet coming into the series, to put it lightly at best. Yeah.
They were 27 games under 500 when the series began, and then finished the series 2 games over .500 because that's Red Sox baseball, baby.
That's how it felt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of number 64, you guys remember Michael Bowden?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was a big prospect.
He was supposed to be great. He did that weird thing with his wrist where he would go right when he was throwing the pitch. Whoop. And then he'd walk you. Or you give up a hit. Yeah, he didn't pan out.
You know, just to take a completely different turn, I was just thinking, like, you know what saved? I don't want to say saved the season, but saved the series. Because the first game in the series, the Sox got their doors blown off, and it was terrible. It was just, like, more of the same. A lot of the errors, like, it was terrible. And then Alex Cora ran a 5K. All right?
Yeah. You're going with this?
I was at the 5K because my fiance was running it, and I saw Cora pass the finish line. All right. When they pass the finish line, they give the medals. They give medals. And that's now what the players are wearing when they hit home runs.
No way.
Let's get it, boys.
A medal for a 5K is insane.
You're insane. This is saving the season.
It's 3 miles.
It's saving the season.
It's saving the season, but it's a little bit insane to get awarded for running 3.2 miles. No, I'm just kidding. That's good. That's a good chunk of running. I'm just being a snob because I like to run.
I can't run 3.2 miles. I've never done that in my life.
Yes, you can. You can run 3.2 miles.
I think the most I've ever done in my life is 2.
No, you definitely can.
Maybe I could. I'm in better shape in general than I used to be, but I also like did not do that by running at all. Yeah, so like I don't do any cardio.
You are in sneaky good shape. You don't get the Pat Brown kind of credit, but you are a fit dude, and it's not just that Cuts brand T-shirt you wear.
Oh yeah, we shout out Cuts. Sammy and I love Cuts. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, dude, I am never ever able to put on any semblance of muscle, but Cuts makes me look slightly bulky, so I love it.
It does. You kind of like for a split second when you look at us in the cut shirts, it's like, oh shit, is that Pat? Oh no, it's Gordo and Sammy.
Yeah, Pat, if you wear a cut shirt, you're not allowed to be near us because you'll be like, yeah, I'm Pat Brown.
I'm going to buy one right now.
All right,
I'm looking it up.
Yeah. Go check it out. But before we get into the games here, before game one in the series, Sammy, we were on the field. We were credentialed up all in the media areas and stuff, the press box, all that stuff. What was your favorite or most memorable part about being on the field? Actually.
Joely.
That's what I was going to say, too.
Joely, I kind of was thinking when we got there that we're going to have to reintroduce ourselves to everybody. Nobody's going to remember us from Fort Myers because we were just there for a little bit. But Joely saw us and he was hyped to see us, which I didn't think any of the players would be happy because – and we were texting the night before, and like we spoke about at the beginning of the episode, the vibes were terrible. And then we got there and – the king of good vibes, Joely, was dancing, and it worked. The Red Sox won the series, so yes, Joely is definitely that was the most fun part. Just chatting with him.
No, to your point, like we talked about how terrible the vibes were, and not just the vibes, like the weather stunk. Like the tarp was on the field, there was no BP, so we didn't see a lot of the hitters. A few of them came out for a little bit. I think there was some sort of group there that a couple of them were talking to. But yeah, guys like remembered us. Some of them were super happy to see us, like Joely, like Bernie's always he's a friend of the program, so he was happy to see us. Did a quick thing with us for social, which was great of him.
Yes, and Gordo, we cannot. So okay, if you didn't see the Bernie piece, Gordo asked him what his favorite part about staying in Boston over the winter is, and no hesitation at all, his first answer was Santarpio's, which by far the best pizza place in Boston. And then afterwards, he listed Regina, kind of insinuating that it was second best, which is totally accurate. That or Pino's, take your pick. But Santarpio's being the first thing he mentioned is so Boston. And I feel like Red Sox fans love that stuff. We up the 5-minute mark. They fucking love that shit. So great work. Great work, Bernie. Perfect response. I was trying to keep it together while I was filming, but I was so excited that he said that. So he's officially a real Boston guy now. And he also plays for the Boston Red Sox, which is pretty cool.
And that's been the response too. And like on social, quote tweets, responses, comments in the Instagram. It's like everyone loves that this guy is just like he's from California and he stayed in Boston in the offseason. Like, who does that? No one does that. He talked about it getting darker. Like, yeah, he's like us. We hate it getting dark early. We hate that it's cold, but Let's get into the series a little bit, and I guess we're going to start with game one. We have to talk about it. It sucked. It was fucking terrible. We were there.
Yeah. That actually, I think the vibes got even lower after game one to correct the record. They were low before game one and even lower after game one because of how just the way, I don't know. You want to go through the game start to finish?
No, I actually don't, because I think you can literally summarize the game by saying they made errors in the first that led to a bunch of runs. Hauk didn't have his best stuff, let up a bunch of hits, wasn't on his game, and the Sox had equal the amount of hits as errors. They had 3 hits and 3 errors.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and then Detmers again, just absolutely nasty, becoming one of the more underrated pitchers in baseball. But that's a conversation for another day. And it just starts with Hauk, who, like you said, didn't have his best stuff, and immediately the infield starts making errors, compounds, and he throws extra pitches. He's probably frustrated. He doesn't show it because he never shows emotion. Cool hand Luke. But, man, that was just a microcosm of all the bad things that were happening was that first inning for the Red Sox. Errors, can't hit lefties.
Yep, and yeah. I like the entire game. It was like one of those classic games where it's just like over before it starts. And we were back at the ballpark the next morning for radio, and yeah, vibes, at least amongst us, like, and fans, people at the ballpark, like the vibes were in the gutter again. And we talked extensively about the Sidon Rafaela to shortstop conversation or any semblance of a different shortstop than what they've had out there. But to their credit, to the team's credit, to David Hamilton's credit, they didn't make errors the next 2 days. David Hamilton actually made a really nice play in game three. He played the position well for those 2 games. So I, like, we could talk about that at nauseam again, but we have talked about that. We talked about it a lot after game one. I don't think that conversation should dominate the podcast because it wasn't really the story of the series. And we, I don't know if anyone else has anything else about game one. I don't even think we need to spend that much more time on it. Pat, you got anything?
Yeah. After game one, it was hard not to gravitate toward. They're going to get swept again. That was my first thought after game one. I thought there was no shot they were winning. One of the next two. I didn't think they were winning either of the next two. That was so hard to watch on Friday.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys were there. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, Pat, mid-May can't come soon enough for Pat Brown. This kid's got to get back in town.
I'm itching.
Another two clean innings, by the way, for my boy Chase. Actually, did he allow a run that game? Was that his first time he gave up a run?
No, he gave up runs before.
Yeah, on the seventh, he gave up a run. All right, but two more innings for Chase Anderson. Keeps the bullpen fresh. I'm going to mention him every time he pitches. Keeps
I mean, he's one of the gazillion pitchers on the staff with a very good ERA. It's at 2.25 right now. He was prepared to come back into the game for game three. Did not happen because the Red Sox did not score in that eighth inning. But, like, yeah, he's been everything they've needed and more. We talked over and over again about these mop-up guys last year that forced the bullpen, the high leverage guys to come back in. It hasn't been the case this year, in part because guys like Chase Anderson. The other guy who had a really good game in that first game, PT Bump, Brennan Bernardino, talks to your boys on Play Tessie and then comes out there, inning in a third, no hits, no walks, two Ks. So we love to see that. Bernie's been pretty much perfect since he's gotten the call back up. I know he's happy to be back. Hopefully he stays up here because he deserves to be up here. But let's go to game two. Game two, we were back there. Vibes, like we said, pretty bad going into the game. Cooper Criswell on the mound. No one really knew what to expect there. Cooper Criswell versus Griffin Canning, who the Red Sox saw before. Mm-hmm. And I think it became pretty evident that they'd seen him because they took him to town right away.
Yeah, man. And that is a gold glove pitcher that you're facing out there. And yeah, he was getting way too much of the strike zone, serving up pretty unimpressive stuff. He was a guy who a few years ago was looked at as someone with a pretty bright future. It just doesn't seem like it's happening. But on the other side, Cooper Criswell.
He was good.
Yeah, not bad. Like Bradfo said, he does that east-west, kind of has the slider and the, I guess it's a two-seam. Sinking fastball looking two seam ish pitch. I feel like nobody knows what the pitches are anymore because there's so many. But yeah, hey, four innings look good.
Yeah. I've got crazy. I've got the stat line for you. He was four innings, five hits, two runs both earned, one walk, four strikeouts. I believe both runs were on one home run by Taylor Ward, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, he was pretty effective start. I mean, I don't want to say start to finish because it was four innings. Like he did let the pitch count get up. But outside of that, like did everything he needed. Like this is a spot start, man. Like this is a guy coming up from the minors, making his first start of the season. He was not really a starting pitcher last year. So gave you pretty much everything you could have reasonably asked for.
Right. Nobody's going to complain about that outing. It was fine. Kind of what we expected. Four-ish innings, limited the runs, not going to blow you away. The strikeouts kind of impressive. Four.
Yeah. And then you had, was it Weiser for two, Winkowski for two, and then Joely for one. And I want to talk a little bit about the bats, but then we got to get back to Joely for a second.
Sure.
But
thing.
I thought game two was maybe the start of something good because we saw Willier continue to hit. We saw Yoshida hit, and he hit even more in game three. Tristan Casas hit just a mammoth of a home run and debuted the 5K medal. It's a thing, Sammy. 5K medal.
Yeah, I know it's a thing. I just
acknowledge it.
Congrats on your 3.2. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I dare you to say that to Alex Cora's face when we see him next.
No.
Do it, coward.
What if he beats me up?
He can now. He's in shape.
Yeah,
That's true. He's in playing shape.
Hey, that Casas home run, not to be lost. That was off of a lefty, I believe they brought in. No, sorry. I got the games wrong, but still 429 feet. looks like he's a Mythbuster, dude. He hates the Red Sea.
Hates the Red Sea.
Myth.
It's a myth. Yeah. But he's not the first one to say that. I forget who tweeted it, but like, yeah, back when he played, Ortiz tried to hit the Red Sea with an aluminum bat and couldn't get to it. I'm not saying I think it's a myth. I don't know, but David Ortiz and Tristan Casas are not believers, and they are two guys.
There's no way. There's no way it's true. Come on.
How is there no video?
Say it again.
How is there no video of it? Because isn't there like grainy video of Babe Ruth calling a shot? So like, how is there no video of Ted Williams hitting the Red Sea?
Because it would destroy the narrative. Do you guys remember when Manny hit that crazy home run onto Lansdowne Street?
Yeah.
Way out of sight.
And then they lied.
They gave the final distance and it was 1 foot less than the Red Sea, miraculously.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah.
Dude, just look at these guys. Look at Tyler O'Neill. And tell me that Ted Williams can hit a ball further than him. Give me a break.
Tyler O'Neill he loves hitting balls that don't even touch Fenway Park.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
I feel like it's every game. It's a crazy home run.
But, yeah. With game two, the only other things I have, why the hell does fucking Taylor Ward murder the Red Sox?
It's always the weird, like, fifth, sixth best hitter on every team murders the Red Sox. Colton Cowser.
He's killing it.
Bitch.
He's to make you feel a little bit better about that guy. He's on fire against Milwaukee now. So
yeah he went deep always, again today.
But yo, Taylor Ward, he's really good. He's kind of like Tyler O'Neill. Really good right-handed bat, always injured. But when he's healthy, good at bats, little bit of pop, some speed. I like him a lot. He just has to stay on the field.
Yeah. And then the other thing was the Emmanuel Valdez thing where he like took a tumble and then big fucking Miguel Sano comes tumbling down on top of him.
On his fingy.
And he's okay. He's okay. It's just like, what was it? A sprained thumb?
His fingy.
Finger?
Yeah. There's a thumb, yeah.
It blows my mind because I feel like in like real life, not talking on the baseball field, I feel like people like fall all the time and are always just like they just get up and they're fine. But with the Red Sox, I feel like every single time a guy falls or like dives or like hits the ground in any way, they like there's an injury. Why is there always an injury when they hit the ground?
The Red Sox, because underneath the Fenway grass is cement. They added that this year.
So how thick is there dirt in between the grass and the cement, or does the grass just get put right on top of the cement?
It's right on top of it. It's their knees are all going to be a mess. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be ACL.
When Chris Martin, when was that game? The last game he played, it was the last game of the Baltimore series. He dove for a ball on the infield. As he was in the air going down, in my head, I'm thinking, he's out for the season. There's no way. He's on the Red Sox. He's laying out. He's cooked. And he actually did get hurt in that. Cora mentioned it today, Sunday, as we're recording. He hurt his non-throwing shoulder. So they held him out today in the eighth inning when they could have used him. Didn't need him, but could have used him because...
Was it on that dive? Is that how it happened?
Has to be. What else?
Yeah,
he hasn't played since then. But yeah, when you have... If you think that's weird, it's not his throwing shoulder. Why would they keep him out? If you have a messed up non-throwing shoulder, kind of leads to bad mechanics. Bad mechanics leads to injuries. Injuries lead to Pat's prognosis. We don't want any more of those, even though he does a great job. Yeah, no more. He doesn't want to do them.
Pat, your Cooper Criswell pitched well. He was previously declared by an anonymous individual on the show to be the face of everything bad. But with so many Pat's prognoses, you might become the face of everything bad.
I was thinking that because the past like 2 weeks have just been nothing but bad news. That I feel like on Twitter, I'm going to be like the poster child, and I don't want that. No more injuries. None. I don't want to stub toe in the locker room. Nothing.
It would be great, wouldn't it?
Also, going back to crashing and getting hurt. Did you guys hear Lou today? when Tyler O'Neill ran into the right field wall.
Oh yeah, he's like, it's the wall. Like, check on the wall.
He was like, Dave O'Brien goes, oh, thinking he was hurt, and Lou Maloney just goes, oh, all right, so we'll go check on the wall.
Dude, how many times?
Great.
And to OB's point, I feel like so many times we've seen guys like just like casually run into that wall, and it ends up being like broken ribs or something ridiculous. Like, because they run into the wall, and it never looks that bad. Do you guys remember when, and this was in left field, but like Blake Swihart just like slowly ran into the wall and he like ripped. What did he do? He like, was it like, did he break his collarbone? Like, it's like stuff like that.
It's never good going into the corners of right or left field. It's always some disastrous freak injury, unless you're Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, in which case the wall you just run right through it. We should do a Pat's prognosis on the wall.
That'd be a good little bit.
Anytime Tyler O'Neill hits a home run, we'll do Pat's prognosis on the balls.
We should have done the windshield.
Ooh, you know, speaking of in game two, we should do a Pat's prognosis on Noah Shanuel's testicles.
Yeah, that was brutal. My God.
That was great.
He fouled that directly off of his balls. And
Pat, can you describe what a testicular contusion looks like?
Torsion. Love that word. Torsion.
Imagine if you had a grape. Okay.
In terms of color or shape?
Both. Actually, that's very important here. Both. And you just flicked it.
Oh.
That's the best I can give you. Definitely. I got nauseous. Yes, Sammy. Perfect.
I got a grape. What do you want me to do with it?
Get a good firm grip and give it a hearty flick.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's from, I freeze my grapes.
Yeah, that didn't sound right.
Yeah, frozen grapes are so good when, especially like, if you're like me and you like to, you know, do a little puff of, you know, Benjamin Franklin.
Do you eat it frozen?
Yeah, well, they're
so good frozen.
Yeah, they're really good frozen, especially when it gets hot outside. They're great. It's like, it's honestly like candy.
Hmm. Oh, that's such a weird sound.
They're really good.
All right. Though this is the conversation we have to have. I wish I didn't tweet it out because, and I'm sure, I think I sent you guys the tweet too. I think we all know what his ERA is, but like Joely Rodriguez's ERA.
Say it.
You want to know what it is?
I actually don't know what it is, so I am
curious. I don't either. So I'm actually curious.
I don't look at stats until like middle of the season.
Oh, this is good. I'm glad you guys don't know what it is. Based off of feel, but based off of what people tweet when he comes into the games, and yeah, just you would think that like maybe in the fours, fives.
I was gonna say. Like high fours.
I'm going to guess.
But he also lets up inherited runs, which skews it.
Yeah. Okay, let me guess. I'm going to say 3.8 something.
I'm going to go 4.37.
Joely Rodriguez's ERA, earned run average, the amount of runs he lets up per nine innings, 3.38.
Damn. Okay. Wow. That's good. He PT does seem bump. Like... He seems a little more calm on the mound lately. I don't want to sound like he hasn't pitched that well. He hasn't pitched like a guy with a 3.38 ERA.
No.
But he's been getting better. I don't feel as nervous when he comes in. Still don't feel great. But slowly but surely, he's been in the league for a long time. It's not like he can't pitch.
He also – it's also not just – it's not about him on the mound. It's just about putting him on the mound in the right spots. Yeah. So, like – there's a lot of pitchers I don't want to see in the game with a one-run lead. And it's not like
put him in with a one-run lead. I'm not going to feel good. As much as I love dancing in the rain with Joely, which you missed yesterday, by the way, Gordo. It was raining and Joely and I we were dancing a little bit. But yeah, no, in a one-run game, I'll get a little nervous.
Yeah, but 3.38 ERA, he closed out that game too. Sox won. It was the first time we got to play Tessie at Fenway Park during the 2024 season.
Literally. Yeah, we Finally got to play Tessie. Look at that.
We played Tessie.
Go Sox. Do I have any notes on game two? Actually, I do. We have to give Hamilton credit. Clean game after everyone was ripping him, myself included. Deservedly ripping him.
Oh, he cleaned it up. Big time ripping. We all did.
Yeah. And then we'll get to game three even better. So steady improvements. I still don't love him at shortstop. I don't think many people do, but it's nice to see him trending up for the last two games.
Yes. And you have to give him credit because, yeah, game two, he made all the necessary plays. Game three, he also made all the necessary plays and gave you a bonus. So got to give credit where it's due. Agreed. Still don't feel that great about it. But, I mean, he hopefully shouldn't be completely terrible. Like, we for, like, basically the next week after Trevor's story went down, the shortstop play, regardless of who was there, was pretty fucking terrible.
Yeah.
I also want to note that this was the first very good game for Willier Abreu. Two hits, both very hard hit. One was a double. He did K two times, which isn't great, but like I said, two hits. He drove in a run, and he's up. You know, it's good to see. He's catching fire. Not catching fire, but he's heating up a bit. He's a guy that we were really excited about at the end of last season. Did not have a good spring. Carried over into the season, and now it. Right when he starts hitting the ball the other way is when he starts heating up. So good signs from Thick Willie.
All right, let's get to game three, because game three, in my opinion, was the highlight game of the series. It was the only game that wasn't over like by the second inning. So this one started off with Tyler O'Neill hitting one to the moon, and then Tristan Casas hitting one to the other moon the other way. 2-0, but Bayo let in a couple of runs. All things considered, Bayo in this one, he was at 69 pitches through three innings. That is basically on pace to maybe give you four, and like maybe he starts out the fifth. He ended up almost getting you six. He got 5 1/3, and then Slayton came in and was able to get through that with only one pitch. So he in essence saved the sixth inning for the bullpen, although credit goes to Slayton there.
I in my notes early in the game, it was really clear that he had no feel for the slider. Anywhere Wong set up, it was like he was just throwing it and hoping it was going there. I missed a lot of spots. He walked a few guys on it, and he also gave up a few hits with the slider, and then it looked like the Angels just stopped swinging at it because they knew it was going to be a ball most of the time. And that turns him into a two-pitch pitcher. He's got the fastball or sinker, whatever you want to call it, and the changeup working. Still good, but it's tough to go deep into games like that. After the fourth inning, it looked like he kind of started to get a feel for it, which is a good sign, but it wasn't enough. He had a really nice backdoor one to get a strikeout. Can't remember who he struck out, but it was a right-hander, front door slider. Looked really good. So for me, at least, I'm no expert, but if he can control the slider, that's what's going to take him to the next level. And it's very clear very quickly when he's pitching if he does or does not have control that day.
Yeah, and that slider is the key to Bayo, because the one thing he has kind of gotten caught with in the past is not necessarily having a put-away pitch. His changeup has always been filthy. His sinker has always played. But it's like, what is your third pitch that you're going to go to? If you use the changeup a few times already, like how are you going to get a guy to go to chase? Coming into today, credit to Red Sox stats with this one, he had a 39% whiff rate on the slider, which, so you're feeling pretty good about the way that pitch is trending. I loved that they kept showing, Pedro Martinez was at the game today. I love that they kept showing him during Bayo's start, because even though they were talking about how unfair like the whole mini Pedro thing is, and Pedro saying that Bayo had better stuff than he did at that age and how unfair that stuff is, but like Pedro taught him that slider. Like a lot of the development that we see from Brian Bayo this year and last year can be attributed to the work that he did with Pedro.
Yeah, I don't like that comparison either. There's some similarity, sure, but they're different pitchers. Pedro would go up in the zone a lot. Bayo rarely does that.
It's just the body type.
The body type's the same, and they're both from DR. That's, for me, that's kind of why I think people say. I guess the delivery is kind of similar. regardless, I don't like comparing anyone to Pedro. Probably the best, definitely the best right-hander I've ever watched. I'm not sure if you remember him, Gordo, freaking 14-year-old kid, but I remember Pedro very well.
I remember a few years of Pedro. I have like memories of 04 with Pedro and a little bit in 03.
It was amazing.
I wish I had better memories.
It was like 2017 Chris Sale. Every time he pitched, you knew they were going to win. Just a no shot. Whoever they're playing, don't even show up. It's either you get shut down or – and then the Red Sox had a great lineup at the time. They had a complete baseball team. Huh. Anyway, yeah, don't like the comparison. Bayo could not control that slider first three innings. Started to get a feel for it in the fourth and fifth, and then he ran out of gas. So
They pushed him, and he responded, and it was good to see that. Like, he went over 100 pitches, which I want to say maybe only one other Sox starter has done this year. I want to say they did it with Hauk at one point in his second start. I don't know if anyone else – I don't know if Pivetta did it, but they have not been pushing their guys, but – Cora said it pregame, like, we need innings from this guy. I have wondered why he had said that, but Martin not being available makes that make sense.
Right. Like, and they had Anderson warming up in the eighth inning in case Slayton got into trouble. For me, that means today was probably supposed to be his like side session or tomorrow or something. And they were kind of doing the, hey, instead of doing a bullpen, why don't you just pitch an inning kind of deal? Not sure, just a guess, but didn't need him anyway. So you still have your long guy going into the series against Cleveland, which we'll preview soon. And just kind of a interesting first eight innings.
Yeah, before we get to the Sox portion of the eighth and the ninth, which I feel like is the majority of the conversation with this game, we got to give like 10,000 shout-outs to Justin Slayton, who people forget that this is his first time pitching major league games. He let up a hit to J-Rod in his first big league at bat. And then after that, I want to say it was 8 1/3 innings before he let up another hit. And this is a guy pitching his first innings in his major league career.
Today was the first time he gave up an extra base hit, and it was to Mike Trout on a great pitch, too. Not even his fault. Below the zone. Yeah, Trout golfs it. That was probably like 4 inches above the ground, and Trout hit it 394 feet off the wall in center field. Just a freak. Can't even be upset.
He literally lost his balance swinging. That ball was so low out of the zone, and it was a triple.
Oh, can you imagine if the Red Sox had Mike Trout? That would be so cool. He is the man. I love that guy.
Anytime I get to see him, I always make sure I get to at least one Angels game during the one series they play at Fenway every year. And I'm always just like in awe looking at him. Like, even if he's like just running on and off the field, it's like, holy shit. Like, this is like maybe the greatest player of this generation. And we've never seen anyone like him.
Yeah. Doesn't have good numbers at Fenway either, which is weird. Most righties do.
Especially I feel like he's never done that much damage against the Red Sox.
No. No, but I think before we talk about Kenley, we should talk about the Red Sox eighth inning.
Yes.
Started, I'm not going to remember who was on base, but they got the first two men on, first and second. And this nearly caused me to like burst a blood vessel in my head.
Rafael got it on it. So we had Yoshida walked and then Connor Wong singled. With no outs.
Right. Okay. So Yoshida, Rafaela comes up, has not been doing well at the plate. In this situation, all you have to do is you don't need to even get Wong to second. Just get Yoshida to third to get that insurance run. Because at the time, it's 5-3. Pop up on the infield. Maybe got some outfield grass. Doesn't absolutely nothing. Early in the at-bat, too, which was frustrating. Like, you could have waited, maybe the pitcher throws a pass ball. Maybe you could also bunt in this situation. I hate bunting, but this is late in the game. You want to get one extra run. You're not really playing for the big inning. You could have bunted there. He doesn't. Pops it up. Brutal. Then, now you have one out. David Hamilton comes up. And I actually don't hate Hamilton's offensive profile. I don't love it, but I don't hate it like I hate his defense. Crazy good speed. Little bit of pop. He hits the ball on the ground. He has a chance to beat it out. Blah, blah, blah. He comes up. Ball one, ball two, ball three. Feeling really good. You're about to load the bases for Duran, who's hot. Strike one, 3-1. Strike two, 3-2. And then he chases strike three, which was a foot above the strike zone. Unbelievably frustrating. And then Duran comes up. He had some tough pitches. Doesn't get the job done. And those innings are the kind of innings that people will gloss over, but those will kill you in the end. When you don't get that extra run, and it was so close to being the difference. Thank God it wasn't. But my God, that was for me. I can't stand stuff like that. Little things when it's on a platter for you and you don't take it. That is what gets me more than anything.
I always, whenever those innings happen, I always tweet out like, don't love innings like that. So that if it does bite them, I can quote tweet and be like, yeah, see it. Those innings, they fucking suck. What the fuck?
Yeah, right. And you don't need three runs. Just get that one extra in the ninth inning, heading into the ninth. Excuse me. It makes a world of difference. But they didn't get the job done. And you want to start off with right. Yeah, you want to go back to, what was that, the sixth inning?
I think it was the sixth inning.
Okay, Pablo. Pablo's on second base. There's first and second. Pablo had just given the Red Sox the lead, feeling good. 3-2. He's on second base. It's a full count with two outs, which means no matter what, the runners are going to be running. You don't need to take a big lead. Everyone in the world knows you're going. And Pablo gets picked off of second base. That cannot happen ever under any circumstance. He knows that.
Didn't Wong get picked off at 1.2? Was it Wong? Someone got picked off at some point later on after that.
You think it was Wong. But
they lead the majors.
Yes. And at the very end of
base runners getting picked off.
At the end of the sixth.
Oh, right. Yeah. He was going first movement, though. That's a little different. Reyes was just off the base.
Yes. And the Reyes were situationally, too.
You're not trying to steal third base in that situation. You're trying to get a head start because no matter what, you're running. Full count, two outs. It's just the lowest baseball IQ thing you can do. And this comes in a series where he also tried to bunt with two strikes. That might have been the last series. He's also tried to bunt with two strikes this year. Kind of like forgot halfway through and then took a pitch right down the middle. So I like Pablo. He's very useful in my opinion. Versatility, puts the bat on the ball, doesn't strike out too much. But you cannot. You got to clean that shit up. That is gross.
How was your blood pressure in the ninth, Pat?
So sky high, because I was driving back to Connecticut, and I was just hearing Will Fleming go, and there's ball four, and I'm like, no. The entire drive home. The impending blown save was driving me insane. But Kenley once again walked the tightrope somehow, some way, and got out of it again. I don't know how he keeps doing this. He's making so much work for himself and then dominating from that point onward.
Yeah, he does the same thing every time. He comes in.
Every time.
Somewhat breaking news right now. I don't know if it constitutes breaking news, but Tommy Pham just signed with the White Sox.
Oh, no.
Not really breaking news.
Pat, I totally agree. He comes in, looks like he can't throw a strike. He's doing the bad body language, kind of moping around the mound. You're like, oh my
God.
Hold on.
Back up for a second, though. This inning started off with him throwing a pitch that barely missed Logan O'Hoppe's head and then throwing a pitch that hit Logan O'Hoppe's head.
Yeah. So he almost hit him and then hit him. And then I believe he has no control. And then, I don't know what happens. It's something clicks and he's like, oh, right. I'm a Hall of Fame closer. Zip, 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 inning over. And by the way, also, go ahead.
It's funny. And I know he was not throwing in the 88, 89 range today like he has been previously. Like it was more so 90, 91, 92. But like, it's just funny because he reaches into his bag and he grabs 95 when he wants it.
Mm-hmm. Veteran, man.
Like, it's there. Like I don't know what the deal is, if it's just like he's not able to do that every pitch or if it's that he doesn't want to do it every pitch. I know that, Sammy, we were talking at the ballpark. I want to say you brought up Aaron Nola, who was purposely not giving it all he's got every single pitch on purpose.
Yeah,
maybe
so
Kenley's
Nola,
doing that. I don't know.
Nola's velocity is down, and I think Phillies fans were freaking out about it. you know, the amount of injuries we've seen this year, how could you not freak out about it? And he said to the media kind of something like, no, we pump the brakes. Don't be worried. I'm doing this on purpose. This is to keep me fresh longer. I'll ramp it up when I need to. So I think that's really cool that he can do that. That's not easy to slow everything down. It sounds like it would be, but
mentally and physically.
Right. Right. Anyway, back to the ninth inning with Kenley. That last at bat, Kenley versus Trout with the tying run on third, Hall of Famer versus Hall of Famer at Fenway Park. That was sick. I love that at bat. And Kenley dominated with Trout. Keep the ball up in the zone. It's kind of like different from most guys. Keep it up, keep it up, keep it up. Kenley did great. Thank God he had his control back by then.
Yeah, to me, it felt like the Renjifo K right before it was even bigger, because before that, the inning starts with hit by pitch, bloop single, walk. So you've got the bases loaded, no outs, and then he gets the fly out to Duran in center. And this was like maybe the one bad thing defensively that the Red Sox did after game one was Duran threw it to like the home plate cutoff man after he caught it, which allowed like the guy was going to score from third. That was going to happen. The guy from second was going to get to third. That was going to happen. So now you're just looking at the go ahead run who's on first. Duran overthrows second base. That runner then gets to second. It was not an error, but it was definitely a miscue on Duran's parts. Now you've got the tying run on third and the go ahead run on second with one out. Him striking out Renjifo there and not allowing that ball to get in play was absolutely massive. And it set up like I had a weird, even though it's Mike Trout at the plate, and like we can talk about whether or not that situation called for an intentional walk. We probably won't say it because it worked out, but had it gone the other way, that's what we would be talking about. But I felt weirdly confident with him pitching to Trout there. I don't know why. I definitely did not have as much confidence with Renjifo, who puts the ball in play a lot. Doesn't walk, but he puts the ball in play quick at bats. Trout gets up there. Yeah, like he was pulling that 95 that we know he's got, and he was pulling it all on Mike Trout.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I was much more nervous with Renjifo just because, you know, contact guy. Also kind of an underrated player at this point. He's got good numbers this year. But yeah, I think the Trout matchup favored Kenley quite a bit. Not to say I wasn't sweating that one out. And I would not have walked him just because Kenley was a little wild earlier in that inning. And you never know, maybe he'll lose another one. But and then you got Ward coming up, who's on fire. So yeah, we all in the group chat, I put, would you walk him before the at-bat starts? And we all kind of said no, pitch to him. So.
But it definitely would have been like if Trout got the hit and both those runs scored, all we would have heard was they shouldn't have pitched to one of the best hitters on the planet, if not the best hitter on the planet. But I'm glad it didn't happen, because I think we would have just referenced our group chat had it happened and said, like, you could go either way. Like, I think it was a no-win situation, or not necessarily a no-win situation, but like,
pick your
you could have justified. Yeah, pick your poison. There you go. Thank you, Sam. Pick your poison.
I got a Wong nugget for you guys.
Ooh,
let's hear Will it. Fleming said on the broadcast today, I think it was the seventh inning, maybe? Wong let up a pass ball. I think it was the seventh inning. Did you know he ranks dead last in the league in blocking percentage?
That's not good. He's also really bad at framing.
You know, and it's shown. There's a lot of balls.
Real bad. Yeah. The only good thing behind the play right now is the pop time.
Yeah, that's been his thing. Like, we look at Wong and we were so concerned with the stolen base thing. I remember last year, because with the bigger bases and the pickoff thing, like, everyone was super concerned about how the hell are you going to hold runners? And Reese wasn't throwing the ball that well last year, but Connor Wong was. And so we gave Connor a ton of credit for his defense. But this year, I mean, last year he wasn't a good framer or blocker either. But this year, particularly with the keeping the ball in front of him, it's been an issue. It's a good nugget, Pat.
Wonder if that's his size, because he's much smaller than most major league catchers.
I mean, I don't know.
But he also is one of the catchers that goes from the kneel position. So you're all hands at that point. it's so hard to scoot and move and use your full body from that half kneel. It's all hands. If your hands aren't fast enough, it's fastball.
Luckily, he's hitting.
The catcher position has been like the Sox second best offensive position this year. Maybe third best because Costa has been so good lately. But I want to get to this because, Pat, at this point in the sequence of events, I'm driving to dinner. You text in the chat like, did you guys see this Kenley Jansen quote? And I'm curious, Pat, read the quote. What did Kenley Jansen say?
First off, he off the bat took blame for being inconsistent, which, I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's going to do that. But then he also said, I just hope we can get better quality baseballs. It's embarrassing. Which, like, I get and I don't. Like, there's the whole spite attack and substance thing and all that. But at the same time, there's no way they're that much different from last year. And at this point right now, he's walking the merry-go-round. He's struggling with control and velo bad. Could that be a factor? Obviously. But at the same time, it's like you've also done this before. It's not nothing super new to you. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Regardless, he's probably right. But why would you say that? After all the quotes that fans don't like, I every quote he said, I've been like, yeah, he's right. But probably don't say that. And this is another one just like when I saw that, I just rolled my eyes. Like, why would you do that? Why, you're not doing yourself any favor. People aren't going to be like, oh, I didn't know the balls were bad. I take back all the mean things I said. They're just going to get annoyed. I would have kept it to myself. Whatever, man. Just keep getting the job done. I don't really care. But I get if people are like, shut the hell up, dude. Pete Fairbanks had a similar quote. Granted, it was in Colorado, so he was talking about how he doesn't like the humidor, blah, blah, blah. And people hated that as well. Nobody wants to hear complaints from major leaguers. I don't know what it is, but people hate that shit.
Well, it's just frustrating because, like, you see he's walking tons of guys and blaming it on the baseballs, even though he did have that caveat before. When you say that thing about the baseballs, that's how it's going to come across. I mean, he's probably not wrong. I would love to know, like, specifically what about the baseballs is so problematic, because he's not the first one that said it. So it's obviously a thing. But, like, I just have no idea what constitutes a good quality of baseball and what they see on these balls that's bad. But, yeah, I knew people right off the bat weren't going to be thrilled about that quote.
Yeah, just keep it to yourself.
Yeah. I've got a few more notes on here before we get into some Nuff Said. And obviously, if you guys have stuff, bring it on up. But the note today from Sean McAdams' piece on Mass Live was that Larry Lucchino, or there was a private funeral for Larry Lucchino, and neither John Henry nor Tom Werner was in attendance for it. Linda Pizzuti Henry was there, but John Henry was said to be feeling ill, and Tom Werner was said to be in England, even though I believe the funeral was held in town somewhere in Boston or Massachusetts or the area, and all of them were in town just 2 days prior for the 04 ceremony, and the Wakefield ceremony, the Lucchino ceremony, whatever, Fenway Park home opener. They were all there for that. And then we're not at Larry's private funeral. I was curious what, like, when you guys saw that one, Sammy, I'll kick to you first on this. When you saw this, what was your thoughts when you saw that?
I think the saddest part of it all is that I wasn't surprised at all. It's kind of like, yeah, that's on brand for them. Of course they didn't show up to that. Were you guys surprised?
No, that was my reaction too, Sammy. It's like, if it's like shitty that they weren't there. Obviously, I don't know how their relationship was towards the end. I assume like there were probably some issues. That's where I was going with that. It's like there was probably some issues that led to Larry ending up moving on from the FSG thing and going to the Woo Sox thing. But that doesn't matter. Like,
I'd feel like ill. Sorry, like, I'm ill. Dude, put on a mask and go. Who gives a shit? I hate that so much. And oh, sorry, I'm in England. I can't come to your funeral. I'm with my soccer team. Sorry, football team, we call it here.
I mean, they have private jets, man. Like,
I'm so rich. I'm so rich, Gordo. You can't tell me what to do. You peon.
Pat, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it's a piece of shit move. I mean, I don't know. I feel like regardless of whatever the fallout was, we don't know what it was. We just know that there was one. That's kind of scum of the earth to not go, especially after the fact of all the success past 20 years, to just kind of throw that out the door and send your wife on your behalf is crazy.
Yeah. Next note that I have, we got to have the Bobby Dalbec conversation. This, he can't.
You want a nugget?
Let me just say one thing and then give me your nugget. But not only is he on the 40 man, not only is he on the 26 man on the big league roster, not only is he playing games, he's hitting fifth. He's hitting fifth. He's protecting Casas. Like, they intentionally walk Casas to get to him, and the Sox ended up pinch hitting with Willier today. But it's like the guy comes up in big spots, and it's just like every single time, it's like, okay, Bobby's got to go. Bobby's got to go. What's your nugget, Sammy?
Okay. I have a nugget followed by a question. Let me go find this nugget. Okay, Bobby Dalbec. First of all, he's 0 for his last 31. 0 for his last 31. 31 at-bats. No hits. Here's the worst. This is even worse. Dating back to last year, 25 strikeouts in his last 37 at-bats. That is... You're the worst hitter in Major League Baseball. Is there anybody? Okay. I don't want to be mean. Like we've said before, we've all heard Dalbec's a great guy. We want him to do well. Is there a worse player in Major League Baseball right now? Not saying he doesn't have potential to become something someday, but right now.
No, Sammy, I don't think that's a like unfair question to ask. I mean, the one thing I'll give him credit for is when the ball has been hit to him, he has made the play every single time, which we've talked about guys in the middle infield who, whether it be Hamilton, Reyes, Valdez, who you're putting in the middle infield, and not only are they not hitting, but they're not providing defense. So like they're literally just like a body out there. Bobby at least has played good defense at third. But the fact of the matter is he does not have a hit this year. He has an 0.56 OPS. He is 0 for 17 on the season, batting .00.
Ugh.
So, and you said the stats dating back to last year. Yes, he has hit in AAA, but we've seen millions of times that there are quadruple A players. And yes, I stand firm that as soon as they cut Bobby loose, he's going to go to the Rays or something and end up being good. But the fact of the matter is it is just not going to happen here. So it's not worth the roster spot. I understand that like while Devers is still reeling a little bit, you might need anything you can sort of get, but like to me, you're gonna get more value with a guy like Nick Sogard, who I have never once proclaimed that Nick Sogard should be in the big leagues. I know there's a lot of people that think that he should be in the big leagues right now, which I think is a little bit insane, but he's gonna give you versatility. He'll put the bat on the ball. Like if there's guys on second and third, one out, he might be able to get one in. That's more than we can say about Bob right now.
And he plays good defense. I wouldn't say that Bob has been playing good defense. He just hasn't screwed up yet. Like he's done exactly what he's supposed to do. He's a major league player. He's made the routine plays.
Hey, fantastic. That's more than anyone else on this team's doing.
Right. But the fact that you have to mention that as your bright spot says a lot. It's also a complete indictment on the Red Sox. The depth right now at the moment at the high minors, not great. So I can't fathom who the fuck in the organization still believes in this guy. What more do you need to see? And again, I'll ask the same question I asked last episode. Who has ever had a leash this long? Ever? It's been years. He hasn't been good for 3 years. What the fuck are we doing?
No, I don't know. I legitimately feel like it's at least as it pertains to this year, was just a money thing, because we talked about all offseason, Gio Urshela, like any, I say that name over and over again because he would have been so perfect having a versatile bench bat who can put the bat on the ball and play good defense at multiple positions. Oh,
yeah,
that would have been so nice. Awesome.
He's exactly who they need. I hate that. But, you know, at the time, he thought he was going to get more reps with the Taggies.
And the Sox, I'm sure, did not offer. I mean, that's the thing is, like, Lou Maloney was talking about this on the radio on, I want to say, Friday, about how, like, these minor league deals should have come together so easily for the Red Sox, because whether it be pitchers or hitters, there were clear paths for these guys to get legitimate big league opportunities. But I just remember all offseason, and this was being reported from several people, the Red Sox were nickeling and diming even the minor league free agents. And that is why guys like Bobby Dalbec are your depth options. Right now, the Red Sox wanted the infield from left to right to be Devers, Story, Grissom, Casas. The first three guys I said, all out right now. So you're going to be going into that depth, and right now it's Bob, and it hasn't been good.
Yeah, he's not. I don't want to keep ripping on a guy. I feel really bad, and he's never done anything bad to us. By the way, funny little tidbit for Gordo and I, our experience at Fenway. We run into Lou in the media cafeteria, and within 5 seconds of seeing him, just goes on a tangent about team defense and how it's killing the Red Sox. He's such a baseball guy. I love talking with Lou. It was so quick. That was the funny part about it. And hey, he's right.
Yep. So I forgot. I said we were going to go to Enough Said, but I totally forgot. Series MVPs. The Playtesting Series MVP. We have to pick a Series MVP. Personally, me, I think there's one guy to pick for this, but curious if you guys have any other nominations.
Who are you going with, Gordo? Because I was thinking of two guys.
Okay. I was going to pick Tristan Casas for my vote because he hit key home runs in both of the first two games. The first game, they were up 1-0, and he hit a two-run homer. And the second game, they were up 1-0, and he hit a home run to go back-to-back.
Yeah, that was my pick. The other one I was going to say was O'Neill.
Yeah.
But I think the timing of Costas' home runs were a bit more impactful. We're kind of splitting hairs, but I'll go Costas as well. Good series for him.
Yeah, I'm going Costas too. Shout out Justin Slayton, though. He absolutely dealt today. Kept that game at distance. He's just been such a weapon. So I'm going Casas, but Slayton deserves a nod there.
Yep, he sure does. And if there's any time to give a pitcher a nod, it's in a series where they take 2 out of 3. Because if a pitcher like straight up wins a game for you, like there you go. And Slayton kind of like what was the score when he got that double play? It was first and third, one out. Bayo comes out of the game.
5-3. Right? 5-3. And then the Angels scored one more off of Kenley.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. Yeah. So big double play induced there, and then throws two more innings after that. So yeah, shout out Justin Slayton. Shout out Tyler O'Neill. But this series is Playtesting Series MVP, Tristan Casas.
Hey, and shout out to friend of the program, Gabriel Starr, who gave him the new gel nail paint or nail,
ooh,
however it works. And then he hits two home runs. So
it's true.
Maybe it's the gel nails. Switched it up a little bit.
He hit a home run his very first. The giant home run was the very first at bat after she gave him that nail polish. She seemed pretty happy about it, pretty excited about it when he got it. Maybe the guy just likes gifts. Maybe we should like bring him like a croissant next time.
We can bring Casas a croissant and see if it leads to some croissant home runs.
Yeah. Croissant homers. Everyone's favorite. Should we do some Nuff Said? You guys have some Nuff Said?
I sure do. Coop, is mine ready to go? Because I can lead off. I put it in our little chat. If not, someone else can go.
I can go first while we pull it up. Mine is just a big hearty shout out to Mike Gorman, who had his last regular season broadcast as the Celtics play-by-play man today after 43 years of doing it. Dude's an absolute legend. It's crazy to think that he was calling games, 16 years before I was even born, calling Celtics games. He's the voice of that team. He's absolutely going to be missed, but an insanely accomplished career for Mike Gorman. And it was really cool seeing everyone, not just in the Celtics family, but around the NBA, giving him his flowers, video tributes galore. He seemed to have a really special day for his last regular season broadcast, and certainly emotional. But I'm glad that they took the opportunity now to do it, because I know they get to broadcast the first round of the playoffs, but like, you never know with playoff series if there's going to be a window for a guy like that to like get his flowers. So I'm glad that he got that chance now.
Yeah, just one of those iconic Boston voices. He's in that class with like Orsillo, Remy, remind me, Patriots.
Zolak?
Yeah.
Beers?
No. Oh, Beers, yeah, with the Bruins. Jack, Brick, like all those guys that you listen to and you just love them and you're so used to them. Gil Santos is who I'm thinking of with the Patriots. It's been a while, sorry. But yeah, he'll be missed. It's going to be weird not hearing his voice, especially in the home games, because I know he's doing mostly home games now, so I see the parquet, can't say that word. And I don't know. You hear his voice, and it's Celtics basketball, so it sucks when you lose a guy like that. I bet we're going to see him around a lot, though, so that'll be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, you want to do yours? I think we have it up ready to go in a sec.
Yeah. Holy hell. Okay, so the Phillies – the Phillies debuted their City Connects, and I don't know. Look at that. It looks like Mountain Dew had sex with a baseball jersey, and this is the love child. Oh.
Wait, what was – it looks like a Monster Energy drink with the font.
Yeah, or like Five Gum.
Dude, I used to bring – like 10 packs of Five Gum to middle school, and I would try to sell pieces of gum to kids for like 25 cents. I would do it with that and toxic waste. Me and one of my friends convinced people that toxic waste could only be bought in Mexico, and so people would actually pay us for like little toxic waste pieces.
Little pieces of the plastic little things. And then I love this article, the one that we're using on the show. The picture is from UniWatch, which is a website dedicated to uniform watching, and the title goes Philadelphia Phillies debut ridiculous City Connect costumes.
Costumes.
Oh god. Yeah, anyway, I don't mind being bold, but these suck ass. Oh my god,
they're really bad.
You know, and normally you see the City Connect and you're like, oh, those look strange, like the Marlins. I saw them, I'm like, those don't look good. Then you see them on the field, you're like, oh, okay, they actually do look good. I think the Marlins have great ones. These are the opposite. I saw them, I thought, ew, gross. Then I saw them on the field, even worse, which is shocking.
Yeah, so, yeah, those things.
So we had two other separate enough saids on this matter already. Like, this has been like an issue, and like there was like a leakage of it where someone had a truck show up to a Modell's or like some Olympia Sports or something, where someone leaked the photos and everyone like shit on it. And then there was another press release, I think like a month out from now, and everyone shit on it, and yet they still went with it.
I feel like it also has to do with the team that's using them. I'm trying to think, like, if a team with, like, maybe if the Brewers did this, it wouldn't be as nutty. I don't know, just because the colors are a little bit more similar.
That doesn't look like Milwaukee.
No, but it's like closer than Philly.
Yeah.
Who else? Who's closer to this shade of blue?
In the MLB?
Yeah.
Chris Cotillo's basketball team that he loves, the Tar Heels.
Oh. UNC. It kind of looks like the Bucks alternates. The Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh yeah, those suck.
Monster
too.
Energy. It's just Monster Energy or Five Gum or some extreme brand like that. It just looks so bad. the gradient thing that they're trying to do too. Like, I feel like it starts to change color too early. Like, if it were a little lower down, maybe it would look good, but I don't know, man. Why would you just do something Liberty Bell related? Or, like, you know what'd be cool is if these teams did the same colors as, like, another team in town, like when the Red Sox wore their Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
Phillies, so cool. Like an Eagles colored jersey. That'd be cool. An army green kind of look. I don't know. But those suck. Terrible job. 0 out of 10. I hope they wear them all year long.
0 out of 10. Pat, you got anything?
Oh, yeah, I do. Did you guys see any of the skits from last night? SNL?
I did not.
I think
when you get a chance, watch the Beavis and Butthead skit. It is so SNL has sucked for about probably 10 years now. Every so often they hit. Last night they murdered, and it was the Beavis and Butthead skit. It's like an impromptu, like open forum discussion about AI, and then the camera pans, and right behind the person interviewing is Ryan Gosling dressed as Beavis, like blonde perm, the shorts, the shirt, everything. I'm not going to spoil it, but go watch it because it is a class, like instant classic. That skit was so good.
I didn't know you guys were like old enough to know Beavis and Butthead. I thought if I brought that up, you guys would have made fun of me for being old. I love the
it's in a skit.
Beavis and Butthead Do America, the movie. The teacher, like the hippie teacher, comes in and he's like, "We don't need TV to entertain us." And Butthead goes, "You said anus." So stupid. And anus. He's like, "You said anus." It's a great show. Have you guys seen the movie version? Beavis and Butthead Do America?
Yes.
That's I haven't good. Seen it.
And then there's the they actually rebooted the show in the early 2010s. And you know when they reboot shows, it usually doesn't work. I actually really liked the reboot. It was basically they completely changed the format. It would be like a music video comes on, and Beavis and Butthead are talking over it, just ripping it to shreds or saying they like it. I don't know. I thought it was good. It's a really underrated comedy entity.
Anything else, boys, before we wrap this thing up?
What are you wrapping?
All right, I'll bring this thing home in that case.
What thing are you bringing home? Okay. Anyway. All right.
Thank you for tuning in to Play Tessie episode 64. Before you leave, before you click on the series preview, which should be either be right below or right above this, we will be previewing the Red Sox upcoming 4-game series with the Cleveland Guardians. Before you do that, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, whether it's on Apple, Spotify, or the Odyssey app, or whether you're watching this video on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button to either Play Tessie Podcast or the WEEI YouTube channel where we've got our own playlists. Hit the thumbs up there on YouTube. Hit the 5-star button on the podcast. Tell us what you think of the Beavis and Butthead skit. I am excited to watch it. I have not seen it yet, but I will comment what I think of it when I see it. But appreciate you guys tuning in. Hit that button below or above for that series preview. That's coming up next. But for this episode, for now, for episode 64, for Sammy and for Pat, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie. Thanks for tuning in. Toodaloo.